You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
I avoid and I use the avoidance to go over prepared, or I don't prepare at all. It's like I'm both of those.
Honestly, I found that sometimes over preparing made it worse.
When you're feeling fearful, try to change your body immediately. Right? Literally, walk around your living room.
I think fear for a lot of us is this emotion that we try to suppress and repress and get rid of instead of embrace.
Welcome to the Lunch Break ABCs. This is round number 6 of this show that is designed to help you excel in both your personal life and your business. I'm joined today by the one and only Christine Smith, Andrew Biernat, and Ben Albert, and we're here today to talk about what you wanted to hear more about, which is how to overcome fear. Today, we're talking about strategies for achieving brave and confident living. And listen, we can't do this without you. Leave your comments, leave your feedback in the comments, leave an experience that you had in your life where you overcame fear yourself, or maybe an experience you're going through right now that you don't mind sharing. So the four of us as a panel can help you to overcome that challenge together. It's great to be here with you guys. Ben, you looked up the definition of fear. That's probably a great place to start. What is the definition?
I was having anxiety and a little bit of fear about talking about such a big topic. So I Googled the definition. Noun, an unpleasant emotion caused by the belief that someone or something is dangerous, likely to cause pain or threat. And then as a verb, be afraid of someone or something as likely to be dangerous, painful, or threatening. So ultimately a fear of danger, possible pain or threat. And we can talk about this. I feel like some of our quote unquote fears aren't that dangerous or life threatening. So that's interesting when I read it out loud.
So I wanted to actually take it from that definition. We had a really good comment on the post. It was by Julianne Cooley, who always gives great comments. She says what you just said in a different way, Ben. She said, fear is not inherently bad. Fear is looking out for us and it wants to protect us. Unfortunately, that overprotection is magnified and it keeps us stuck. You know, that feeling of you shouldn't do this, you know, you don't even know the next step. When we feel that emotion of fear, because if you think about what fear really is, it's this instinctual emotion that we had since the beginning of time to rescue us from the tiger, to rescue us from some other animal or other tribes, people who were out there to get us, to protect us from the berries, not wanting to eat the bad berries. So having fear of not eating any at all, like that emotion is there to serve us. But in today's world where we have Zoom and where we have social media and where we have business problems and not just survival problems, that feeling is the same, yet the context is very different.
I mean, I would almost correlate it to the question I ask on my podcast is the unknown factor. So it causes almost like a paralysis, right? Like we don't make any decisions, good or bad, because, you know, we're tripped up by, well, you know, this could happen if this happens. And it's like, well, you don't know until you go down that path. And I think it's well said that, you know, in our world now, right, we're not necessarily being chased by saber-toothed tigers in a sense, but it's still preventing us from looking past some of those pieces. And I think that's something that a true entrepreneur has learned how to deal with, right? Like that challenge, that discomfort, getting out of that zone, breaking through that barrier, because the fear is, you almost use it as like a fuel, right? Like that unknown factor is like, okay, well, I don't know what's going to happen, but if I don't go down this path, I can't, one, learn from it. I can't gain a new skill, gain a new contact, or make sure that, you know, isn't the direction that I need to go in the first place.
John Knotts replies to that and says, you haven't met some of the bosses I've had. I believe him. I was afraid this morning, if I can just be open and honest.
Tell us, what were you afraid of?
It's funny because the things that we're actually good at, we're still afraid when it comes to the time to perform. I signed a new client recently and they're doing very well in business and they want to do even better in their business. And I've got an entire process that I bring them through, right? But this was our first onboarding conversation and it's always the longest one. And beforehand, like the night before, especially, I'm just thinking in my mind, all these thoughts are coming through, like, you know, what do they expect? What if I don't perform up to their expectations? You know, what if the way that I coach is a way that they don't prefer to be coached? What if I'm not able to help them? Like all these thoughts come into my mind of what if I'm not actually the person for this? And when it comes to that, like, obviously I've done this for a long time. I know that I get results for people, but even so, some people call it imposter syndrome. When you're put in the ring to do the thing, I didn't mean for that to rhyme, by the way. When you're put in the ring to do the thing, you still feel that anxiety, right? You still feel that feeling. Like I feel fear personally, like in my breathing and like in my chest. So when I'm starting to get like fearful, my breathing is more shallow. I start to get more in my head. And like Tony Robbins says, when you get in your head, you're dead. But when I start the conversation with these individuals, it flows naturally. Like it was the easiest thing in the world. I'm in my state of flow. I'm in my zone of genius and I feel good. We had an amazing conversation. And at the end of it, just like most coaching conversations, I'm like, wow, what a really great conversation. But I don't know about you guys. One of the best ways that I overcome that fear is over preparation. And I know that can be a double-edged sword because some people prepare way too much. Right? They go to Toastmasters for 20 years before they actually give a real speech in the world, right? They over prepare. Some people read 40 business books before getting the LLC. They over prepare. But there's a balance between if you're afraid of something, the best way that you can get yourself in the zone is to prepare as much as possible, but not too much to the point where you're not actually taking action, if that makes sense.
Dude, I love that. And I think it's really interesting because I think that probably plays into some of our own psychology because I'll spin that. For me, if something is fearful, I'm going to do as much as I can to not think about it, ignore it, and not do it. And say it's a speech that I'm giving or it's a client that I'm meeting with, is I'm going to put distance between preparation. I'm going to put off doing that research. I'm going to get in my own way just because I don't really want to think about it. I don't really want to deal with it. And if it is in my zone of genius, typically I can set myself up well to show up and crush, right? Kind of like you mentioned, you fall into that state of flow. If it's a coaching style conversation, if it's a workshop, I can do those really, really well. But if it's outside my zone of genius, like then my penchant for procrastination puts me in a really, really, really hard spot. And so for me, I know that like when I'm fearful, I tend to avoid. And I think it's interesting that when you're noticing that you're fearful, you tend to like go all in and hyper prepare. So kind of curious maybe for other two friends here, what do you guys think and what do you guys do when you get in that kind of zone of fear?
It's funny. I do both of those things. I avoid and I use the avoidance to go over prepared or I don't prepare at all. It's like I'm both of those. And you said if you're in your head, you're dead. Brandon, was that the Tony Robbins quote?
Yeah, that's the phrase he says.
So I've got to pinch myself today because I get in my head all the time. and I keep going back. Maybe I shouldn't have brought up this definition because now it's distracting me, but I keep going back to that. An unpleasant emotion. So it's physiologically unpleasant, caused by a belief. That's the word that stands out to me. A belief that someone or something is dangerous, likely to cause pain or threat. So it's a belief that something is likely. And is it likely? Probably not. Is it just a belief? Probably. And then you get, you know, stuck in your head with the analysis paralysis. What I do is if there's something on my calendar, and it's not that it's a difficult task and I'm fearful that I'm not going to do a good job at it or I don't have the time allocated, I'll just drag it to the next day. And then if it doesn't get done, I'll just drag it to the next week. And I have things that are creative and they fill me up, but they're not urgent concerns. And I just drag them a month away. And then a month later, drag it to the next month. And it's like I'm fearing the discomfort of doing something that isn't super urgent to my business. And that's one way it comes up to me. I got to pinch myself the entire conversation because I feel like I'm stuck in my head and learning as well. But whether anybody wants to give feedback on what I just said or in a moment, we'll get into some the action steps we take to get out of fear. Any thoughts from Christine or Brandon on this kind of stuff?
So go ahead, Christine. I'll just comment on like how I've dealt with this, because it's similar to like Andrew and Brandon's actually. So there's always, I definitely have like a fear of disappointment. And that's why I'm a people pleaser. So I have to sit in that moment. So someone commented about like, you know, making sure that is this actually really a fear that you need to be concerned about, right? So sitting in the feelings is something that I try to do, like, okay, am I just overreacting to whatever this thing is? And honestly, I found that sometimes over preparing made it worse. So I will fly by the seat of my pants because I'm like, listen, it's not a big deal. I can handle it. I got this. Even if it's slightly out of my comfort zone, because like the things that we think are out of our comfort zone aren't really that bad. So, and every time I've done that, it's always been way better than I ever thought it would be. So I'm like, why would I stop?
why would I take the time to get ready for something?
Exactly. I'm still doing it. Why would I waste the time? Like, I look at it as like, you know, so this intrusive thought is in my head, right? And it's making me feel super uncomfortable. And I'm like, no, I'm not giving you any time. I have other things to do. I'm not going to do anything for it. An hour before I got to do whatever it is I got to do, I'm like, all right, I got to talk about this, or I got to do this type of thing, and we're good. And that's it. And I check that box, and I'm over, and I'm done, right? And then after that thing is done, obviously your feelings are completely different about whatever it is that you had to do. And you're like, oh, I managed to do that, right? It wasn't that bad. It wasn't that scary. But I felt that in the past when I have overprepared, it just made me go crazy. And I felt like I put way too much time and effort into something that, you know, I was really worried or you know, scared about. I'm like, no, I'm not going to let it take over at all.
So then you do zero preparation.
Zero. Zero, yeah. like zero, literally the first, I don't know if any, like, Brandon, I don't know if you've been to Wine and Games. So I've been hosting an event called Wine and Games Speed Networking for about 6 years. And the first event that I put on, I did it at the Saratoga Winery in upstate New York. And the first event that I did, because I just came up with it because it was one of those things, like I was not feeling it at some of the other networking events I was going to. And I was having a lot of trouble figuring out the flow of the event. And I was like, I'm just not going to, I'll figure it out when I get there. No joke. On the way to my first event, I'm facilitating. Okay. I made the event up. I'm literally like figuring out the flow of the event on the way there. So I had like a 20-minute car ride. And at the end of the event, I had like 25, 30 people show up. And they're like, oh my God, this event's amazing. And I was like, yep. Mm-hmm. Why further prepare? I work better in that way.
You also have those skills already of knowing how to communicate. And the skill, I think it's a skill to be on your toes when you need to be. That's absolutely a skill that you get better at the more that you do it. But at the same time, what you just said, Jeffrey actually left a comment and said, over-preparation is utilizing an unconscious defense coping mechanism. You are suppressing fear rather than feeling it, and you're absolutely right, Christine. Then you would be at the end or the outcome of the thing that made you afraid, and you thought, why did I spend 5 hours preparing right. for that thing? So it's absolutely true. And Crystal wrote this, and I wanted to wait to pop it up because it hides your two faces in the bottom, but I'll read it quick. Crystal wrote, she helps people overcome fear through the power of the subconscious mind, which Andrew mentioned something about a little bit ago. Humans are the only beings that can choose how we would feel in life, how we would rather feel in life. Embracing this ability to overcome fear is so powerful. So to your point, Crystal, and I'm going to read one more because it goes in line with that, is this right here, also by Jeffrey. I never heard of this before, but Jeffrey wrote, fear is actually an unconscious activation of the dorsal vagal autonomic nervous system. So I had no idea what that was when he wrote that. So I Googled it while one of you were doing your thing. And that nerve says it's So this is what I take from this. That dorsal vagal nerve responds to cues of danger. But a lot of these cues of danger that we're experiencing are created in our mind, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's two points I want to make here. The first point is we're not talking about eliminating fear, because then you would have a very boring life, right? Fear is normal. Everyone experiences it. You're going to experience it again, maybe on a lower level, maybe on a greater level. It means that you're in a place of growth. It means that you're in a place of taking it to the next level, right? Now, at the same time, to what Crystal said, we get to choose how we feel. And I remember when I first started giving presentations, I got some really great advice from I hate saying this because you guys make fun of me, but I got some great advice from a mentor.
Which one?
I got so many good mentors.
I had a lot of people looking out for me. Okay. It was a big company. And they said, Brandon, if you want to do a great job with this group, don't focus on the nerves that you're feeling. Don't focus on that fear, because when you're focusing on that fear, that simply means that in your head, you're creating a picture of what you don't want to happen, right? So what I would ask everyone listening to do is the next time you feel that fear, remind yourself to be conscious of the picture you're creating in your head, right? It might be a picture, it might be a moving image, whatever it is. Just pay attention to it. Are you seeing in your head what you want to happen, or are you seeing what you don't want to happen? And the trick is, what would it look like if you had a magnificent outcome to this situation? So if it's your example, Christine, with the wine and games, what would it look like if you delivered an amazing wine and games? People were smiling at the end. Some people were probably pretty buzzed at the end. People have met new people, right? They've connected. They've become friends. So you see that. You see their smiles. All of a sudden, with you seeing this happy image, this happy scene, your fear begins to dissipate. The thing is, you're just not even focused on it anymore. So try instead to see what you want to happen, and then what emotion comes from that? Probably emotions of excitement, emotions of enthusiasm. It's weird because that excitement kind of feels the same as nervousness, right? Mm. They feel like similar emotions. I know we talked about that before, but it's a very real thing, but you can contort it the way that you need to.
I want to share a story that I think ties really well into that idea. So you kind of talk about visualization, right? And I know for me, I'm a poor visualizer, right? Michael Phelps can picture himself, you know, swimming and winning races and doing all this stuff. For me, I struggle to visualize tying my shoes. So like what I have to do is something a little bit different. And my wife and I did this when we were in a really, really challenging situation. So our first daughter at the 8 month and, you know, 8.5 month mark, they did an ultrasound and found that she was lined up feet first. And so ideally, for those that don't really know about babies, you want babies to come out head first. Way easier, way better, way safer. And so we're getting all kinds of nervous because she's not head down. It's very scary. And as time goes on, as the baby gets bigger, it becomes more difficult for that baby to flip around in the uterus. And it gets to a point where, you know, maybe that baby has to go through a C-section and come out that way. And so, you know, again, the health risks were not nothing, but it wasn't extraordinary, right? It wasn't like, oh no, everyone's going to die. It's just like, okay, there's an increase in risk than what we thought initially. And so we started getting really stressed. We started worrying. We started getting really concerned. And we felt fear. We were worried for our baby. And I was worried for my wife going through this process, right? We start giving birth and she's coming out feet first. And what do we do? So instead of trying to, you know, sit down and just like imagine or visualize or just try to talk it out or figure it out, we did a flow chart. We actually sat down and said, okay, what are the possible outcomes of what could possibly happen right now, right? And we ran through each scenario, okay? So, okay, so let's say the baby does not flip, okay? And we go into labor. Then what happens? Okay, we go into labor and there's a couple possible outcomes there, right? The baby starts coming out and then we have to go do a C-section. Or the baby's delivered fine, feet first. Okay, so those are the options that happen there. There's certain risks that are associated with each of those, okay? And then there's other scenarios. Another scenario was, okay, maybe the baby flips over and we're fine and we give birth naturally and it's all good. And then another scenario is, okay, maybe then we get to a point where the baby has not flipped, but we haven't gone into labor and we opt to do a C-section, right? And there was a couple other scenarios. And we just walked through in totality each scenario. And then what we did was we looked at these scenarios and we drew in color on this like big, you know, like giant sticker paper, you know, put it on the wall and like in color, filled out which ones we didn't want in red. We do not want these outcomes. Okay. We do not want the baby to be coming out first and go to a C-section. We do not want a C-section was another one, just to go in and do a C-section. If we have to, we'll do it, but it wasn't our primary goal. And so we figured out which outcomes we did not want. We looked at the outcomes we did want. The ideal one is the baby flips around and we have a nice, healthy, natural birth. That was our goal. And so that's the prime one. And so it's like, okay, what can we do to get closer to that actual goal? And so we found those things that we had control over and we took control over those controllables. We did what we could to manage those things. And so some of them were ridiculous, like, you know, taking these certain spices and doing this other stuff, sitting upside down on an ironing board, leaning up against the couch to try and move the baby around, going and trying these chiropractic techniques and doing it. We did it all. We threw everything at it. But we did because we had a plan. Those were controllable. We can take this little pill that's going to make the baby's nose turn up and spin upside down. We can have you lay down on this ironing board and maybe the baby will flip that way. And so what ended up happening was, we went in for an ultrasound getting closer to delivery date and baby's head was facing down. And at that appointment, the guy was going to actually try to manually turn the baby in utero. And there's a chance that, you know, the water breaks or that the baby goes into emergency and I'm like, boom, 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 could be a C-section that day. Right. And so we're there that day with, okay, we're going to do an ultrasound. And then if the baby is, you know, not head down, then there's a chance that we have the baby today. And so, you know, so we went in, we had done everything we could. And I'm going to be honest, like a lot of our fear was dissipated because we had taken control of those things that we could not control. And for us, we're people of faith. And so, you know, those things that were beyond our control, we looked elsewhere, right? We looked upwards for help with some of that. So just kind of a different spin as far as visualization for those that actually need a visual. That for me worked out really, really well.
Hey, by the way, who taught you about like, because that overarching theme of what you just shared was control what you can, right? Yeah. But especially in a stressful situation like that with your child, emotions are running high. Like, how did you take a step back and actually put that plan into action? Because I feel like that's a lot easier said than done. Like, did someone help you or guide you? What did it look like?
It was one of those, like, we just kept circling. We kept circling and we kept circling and we kept staying stressed. And I didn't want to be there. My wife didn't want to be there. And so I was like, we got to do something. Let's do something. And so we didn't even know what to do. And so the first step was, let's figure out what to do. And so we started kind of mapping something out on paper. And I'm like, you know what? Let's draw this out. So I spent a lot of time going through some personal counseling. And I know whenever I can map something out, whether it is, you know, in previous trauma or challenges that I've experienced, whenever I can visualize it and map it out, I see it better. So for me, I probably learned it in counseling in some way where just getting that visualization out and creating something physical to look at, it just kind of came up again in that stressful moment to let's lean on that. Let's test that out.
That's awesome, brother. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Let's see here. We got a couple of really good comments. So I'm just going to throw Jeffrey's up here. Now it hides all of Ben. Jeffrey says these cues typically arise from suppressed past experiences that go unprocessed. We neglect to feel the authentic emotions we are experiencing in the present moment. Therefore, they are stored and triggered for future activation. Yeah, I love that comment. I just recently read this book by, what's his name? Gabor Mate. He wrote the book, When the Body Says No. And it was a very deep book. It took me a while to get through. I'm not really that in-depth of a reader. You know, the simple books are better for me. But this one was, I had to reread like paragraphs over and over and over. But he said exactly what Jeffrey said. If we feel that fear, and like you said, Andrew, if you stayed in that moment and you guys just continued to be stressed and worried and fearful, then it would have built and built and built. And now you've got this entire ball of fear in your body that even 10 years after the baby's born, that ball of fear is staying there. It's going to grow. It's going to morph. It's not going to change until, like Jeffrey says here, you've got to release it, right? You've got to release that emotions. But this is the thing though. And this is why it's really good that we're having this conversation and many people do. Some people don't have the tools necessary in order to release that, right? You have to develop those tools. And we actually have a new fear here in the comments. This is by Caitlin Pickard. Thanks for sharing, Caitlin. She says, I'll share a new fear that I am facing. I just took on a gig that is much larger than my usual. and I fear I am going to have to turn down or delay a future gig as a result. It feels absurd because this large gig is a great opportunity, is what she wrote there. So I'm curious to hear, like, what this says to me is the same thing that we've been saying. Like, number one, it's normal to feel that way. That is fitting for this. It's normal to feel that way. But at the same time, like, who knows what is going to happen in the future, right? Like, why take time now worrying about what might happen or what might not happen? Very much easier said than done. But what if instead we just focused on the moment that we're in right now? What is the situation now? The situation now for you is you've got a better, larger gig that you get to do and the people you get to serve versus what you might have to turn away. And who knows? You could be spending time worrying. And then after this gig, the next larger gig comes along and you do are able to accept it. And you forget that you even had this worry or fear in the first place, right? What do you guys think about that comment? I'll put it back up there for a second.
The one thing I'll say, and from a friend and mentor of mine, Linda Healer, is she always says, do the next best thing in front of your nose. And sometimes just being present with the opportunity and embracing it will allow you to dispel that fear and then embrace more opportunities as they come. But as a total side note, between Caitlin and John here and Jeffrey, I'm just bringing this up live. Eventually, let's bring on guests, because I just want to say one more time, I'm not an expert on this stuff, and I want to learn more from Jeffrey. So in the future, I say we find a way to bring up guests. But again, Linda Healer says, next best thing in front of your nose. And the way I see that is embrace what's in front of us and tackle it with grit. Don't not feel fear, but fear less. Don't be fearless, but fear a little bit less. And that's my non-scientific perspective on the matter.
I mean, I think sometimes some of these things come with time. So like Andrew, I actually had a similar situation with my first pregnancy. And it was very, very overwhelming to deal with, because I'm getting opinions from all these other people who have, you know, may experience something similar. And they're like, oh, you know, don't worry about it, or do this or do that. Right. And I finally was like, all right, what is it that I can do? Right. And what are the outcomes? Okay, well, here's the facts, and here's the facts if it goes the other way, right? And saying, okay, well, how am I going to manage those things as they come? What is the goal at the end of the day? In this particular situation, it was make sure mom and baby are healthy. That was the goal, right? So nothing else mattered at that point. And it helped relieve any of the additional fears that I had, because I was like, well, that's the end goal. Like, it doesn't matter what happens. That is the end goal. And I think you can apply that same methodology to anything that you might fear, right? Okay, so what happens if that happens? Like, let's talk through it. Like, let's tell the story. Story A, okay, well, you know, using Caitlin as an example, okay, you can't work with the next person right away. How is that a bad thing? Right? Like, oh, you know, this other gig is going to take longer. We're going to be done at this point. I can pick you up, you know, at this point. Right? Okay, what's the next scenario that could happen, right? And I think helping, I almost feel like it's therapeutic to have your brain work through scenarios because you're not just stuck in like, oh my God, it's bad and it's on fire. Okay, well, what happens if we put out the fire? Then what actually happens? Or what happens if the fire actually never starts? And how would we react to that? How would we feel about that? Who can we ask for help for some of those things? And I agree with the manifesting piece, right? Like thinking about, okay, well, this thing was dumped on my lap and I'm not happy about it. Okay, we'll deal with it at that point. Give yourself, you know, maybe the day to be like, I'm angry about this. This sucks. I don't like it. And then the next day you're like, okay, what am I really upset about? What am I really scared of? What can I change? How could it look? What does that visual look like? Whether you map it out, kind of like Andrew does, or you write yourself a story. I love the story angle for myself because I'm a very visual person. And I always, my brain always seems to be like, oh, there's another option. I like that. And it definitely helps bring, you know, the blood pressure back down. You know, in that sense. And I think it also gives you almost like a, like another outlet, right? Like, okay, well, the fear was just based on the lack of information, right? But you found more information and now, you know, it's not so bad.
So you, you actually take a notebook and you, you write out the story of what you're...
No.
What do you mean?
I don't need to do that anymore. Although I have, so
yeah, okay.
I don't journal. Like some people are into journaling and I can't do that. But, if I really need to fine tune, a manifesting situation, I will tell the story as if it already happened. And I've gotten so good at that. I can just do that like in the car and I'll talk in like third person and I will tell the story of like how an event went or a workshop or something that was causing me to be in some sort of paralysis. Cause I started looking at things as like an energy perspective, like how much time am I wasting on these things I can't control? Right. So why not spend the time on the things I can control? And I'm a very big checklist person. Okay, it's done. I've dealt with it. Like, I don't need to deal with it again. Like, I don't need to come back to this thing because it's not a good use of my energy and time. And when I tell the story, it satisfies like that need. All right, what's the worst that could happen? Like, you know, you play those games as a kid. What's the worst that could happen with this thing? Like, when you actually look at what those things are, they're usually not that bad in, you know, in general sense. Obviously in health concerns, there could be something, but even then, right? Like, okay, the worst that could happen. Okay, well, how are we going to manage that? Who do we need to call? Like, who do we need to have there? Like, how are we going to do this? And I know that like, you know, in my personal situation, like, you know, the last time I was like, all right, the worst situation is I have to have C-section. Right. That was the worst that I built up in my mind. It's okay. Like, it's going to be okay.
Yeah, no, I love that idea even of like, I'm a journaler and I've never done this, but I feel like the next time I feel that fear, I might actually write down the story of it. But I'd like to pose a question before I read this great quote on fear by Donald in the comments here. Think about the last time a fear you had actually came true. I thought about this for about 2 minutes while you were talking, Christine, and I was thinking, when has a fear that I've experienced actually come true? Like, I have fears every single day. Like, sometimes the fear is as small as, I hope that car up there isn't going to turn out in front of me, right? Mm-hmm. But very, very, very rarely will that fear that you're thinking of actually turn into a reality. Like, Caitlin, one last time with your situation here, John wrote above, Caitlin, that's where scale comes in. Right? Because Caitlin, you're used to those smaller, maybe more frequent gigs. And now you've got this larger one that's going to be a more of a time commitment. And you're thinking, what if I don't have time for the smaller gigs that I have coming up in the future? Well, like we said, what if you don't have any more small gigs anymore? What if instead of doing 10 gigs, you're able to do one that pays you just as much, that you actually enjoy just as more, that gives you even more of your time back, right? So when we're at that point of I'm experiencing and feeling this fear, what is that fear actually holding you back from? What could you be thinking about that could actually introduce that element of scale? Mm. And Don wrote, the quote on fear that he found is, don't let fear live rent-free in your head. Yeah, you got to charge it. You got to charge it something. It's still using those COVID rent laws. I won't say the C word.
I know, right now this episode's gonna get
other than canceled.
Nice talking to you guys.
Oh, that's an interesting idea though, right? The idea of like rent free. Ever since I heard that phrase a couple of years ago, I'm like, oh, I absolutely love it, right? The idea of like, you know, when you do something extraordinary or weird or funny and you live rent free somewhere, right? Where you just get to occupy that space. And a lot of times I think fear gets to occupy that space and somewhere, somehow, you know, whether it's, you know, previous trauma, like was mentioned in some of the comments, or just fear of the unknown or fear of opportunity or fear of whatever else, is a lot of times it gets hammered into our brains that this is normal. This is where it needs to be. I just need to keep going to fear. I need to let fear keep owning this spot for me. And, you know, I think it was Jeffrey was talking about it, the idea of, You know, we're either going to tend to overcompensate or we're going to tend to avoid. And both of those, you're not actually experiencing the emotion. And I think that's what us, maybe as a society, as a culture, global culture these days, are not very good at, is sitting and steeping and stewing and understanding ourselves and our emotions that we're in. Because I know for me, I'm a classic avoidant. Any negative emotions, whether it's anger, sadness, grief, you know, fear is definitely one of them. I try to find other things to do. And so when I'm in a spot where a lot of those emotions are coming up, is I'll start leaning into my coping mechanisms. And for a long time for me, alcohol was a coping mechanism. And I've got a laundry list of other ones. And for you people listening, you know, it may be scrolling. It may be shopping. It may be food. Is, I think, fear for a lot of us is this emotion that we try to suppress and repress and get rid of instead of embrace, instead of understanding and coming to terms with it. And so it continues to live rent-free because we haven't had the conversation to talk to them to kick them out. You know what I mean? Is like I remember I had an apartment complex that I lived in. It was the first apartment I ever lived in with my friends. And they let me live there rent-free for 3 months because I was fun. And I was fun having parties. And so at the start of that agreement, though, there was another guy that was supposed to live there. And he was supposed to help us move in, pay rent, all that stuff. And he didn't show up for the first like 2 or 3 days. Like he was like wicked stoned over at a friend's house and he just never showed up. And so finally he stumbles over and my buddy's like, dude, like you can't live here. Right. He basically took a stand, made the hard statement, like, you can't be a roommate, man. Like if this is your behavior, this is the way that you're going to show up here. Like you can't do that. And I always really respected that moment because it would have been really easy to just let the guy move in, let him show up, let him come and go, let him stumble around. And to us in that moment, because we had someone that stood up and addressed the situation, it changed the rest of it, right? He wasn't living there anymore. And I think we can maybe do better at doing that with fear, where we can address it and then see it out the door, right? We can address it and move it somewhere else. And I think that's an opportunity certainly that I have, but I want to kind of spin this into some of our stories about fear. Cause I feel like we can talk up in the clouds all we want about fear, but until we really get down in the weeds, sometimes we don't even know what the insights really are. So I've kind of shared a couple stories about fear in my life. I want to hear about how fear showed up in your guys' lives and maybe some of the insights you've gained from those moments.
How long do we have?
Well, not long enough.
Couch, yeah.
Ben's like, great free therapy session. Let's go.
it's so funny because Brandon was talking about how when's the last time what we fear actually came true, and I think in my life there's been an underlying, and I learned it when I was a child, an underlying need for perfectionism that if I don't think if I can show up and get a 99 out of 100, if not 100, I'm nervous and I don't want to do it at all. Which is crazy because perfectionism, then every fear is going to come true because you're never going to be perfect. So that's immediately going to be a failure. So I never define myself as an educator. I don't have kids. I'm nervous in some social settings. Like I'm still on the journey learning. So when someone asks me to come in as an entrepreneur to lead a group at like an entrepreneurship pitch battle for high school students, where basically you come in and you have a group and you guys come up with a pitch, like a Shark Tank pitch on the spot, and you train them and help them develop it and help them give that pitch, and then it's rated. The whole socialization and me walking out of, hey, I'm an entrepreneur and I do fun things, but I don't have to listen to anyone and I just go do it, to being in a leadership role where I'm actually with children that are looking to me for advice, and part of me feels like an imposter sometimes. It was very fearful, and it's very easy to be like, nah, I'm really busy. I've got client work. This was a free, you know, donation of my time. It's very easy to be like, I'm just not going to do this. And that's what I did 98% of the time most of my life. But I was even talking to Brian Bogert, a friend of mine, and he's like, it sounds like you're going to do it for the exposure, and not the exposure as in like, oh, Ben's cool, the exposure therapy, exposing myself to something that I immediately said, I don't want to do this because of all these reasons that are actually built up from being shy as a child. And I just feel like I'm not worthy or I'm not supposed to be in this room when everyone around me tells me I'm like overqualified to do this kind of thing. So I exposed myself to it. Did we win? Did I do a perfect job? No and no. But I learned, and everyone around me in my group, we got to learn together because I was in that chair. And if I wasn't in that chair, none of that could have happened for me or for them. So it's kick butt. And again, I didn't even get an A. I didn't win. We didn't make the top three. But next time, we will make the top three because I'm ready to go now. So let's go.
Great story, brother. No, I absolutely love that. What you said about perfectionism specifically. Yeah. Well, before I say that, Jeffrey Besseker wrote in the chat again, he wrote, who made you feel not good enough? So one, I'm assuming he said that during the portion of where you said that you felt that way.
One really simple story I can tell is I used to play on the couches and the carpet was hot lava. And I had fun jumping couch to couch. And my parents, love them to death. This was not coming from a place of anything but love. Would always be safe. Don't fall. You're going to hurt yourself. Get off. It's not hot lava. Like kind of shunning the imagination and making me feel like I'm putting myself in a vulnerable place. And I feel like I learned to think I'm going to get hurt in scenarios where I'm not going to get hurt, feel unsafe in scenarios where I'm very safe. And in scenarios where there's a slight, for example, skiing, I'm afraid of skiing. I don't like to ski because I think I'm going to freaking break my arm. In scenarios where you actually can get hurt, even if there's a low probability, the worst case scenario is you get like nicked up in a lot of cases. But I think the floor is hot lava. Oh no, sit down. You know, that out of love may have possibly caused me to develop this irrational fear that I'm always going to get hurt in scenarios where I ain't going to get hurt. So that's interesting. And I appreciate you asking that, Jeffrey. I love my parents, but hey, here's the thing. Every parent is usually a saving grace, and every parent does something wrong. We're not perfect. And this is not to put my parents on blast, but they sure made me afraid of a couple things, I guess.
No, thanks for sharing that, brother. I mean, this is really deep stuff. And let me tell you, someone who inspires me, and I told you this before, Christine, but you inspire me for many reasons. But one reason is you talked about starting your co-working space Hangar for a long time before you did. And now it's real. And now it's a building and people go there and it's amazing and it's beautiful. But that started as a thought, right? And before then, you never owned a business that had a physical place, right? You never owned like a brick and mortar, a real place that people get together and do their thing and meet new people and get their work done. Like, I can only imagine the fear that you faced through that business experience of going into the co-working industry, which was very different than what you were doing. Even though you've never done it before, right? And you've got your business partner and people around you who support you, but like, how did you deal and traverse through that fear? Because I always thought about that with you, especially when you were going through the process.
So it's interesting, right? Like, so I'm in the podcast room in my space right now, and some of it's just like, I don't deal with it at all. I'm just like, no. Like, nothing is going to stop me from doing the things that I want to do. And okay, if we need more members, okay, what are we going to do to fix that, right? When we first started building the space, we came across some issues, like stupid things like furniture being delivered wrong and having to put everything together ourselves. You know, we painted and we built the space ourselves, right? Like, we didn't hire out. And, you know, the fear of getting it done on time, the fear of like, okay, is it going to look good? You got three people bringing in ideas, and it's one of those things you want to trust your partner. And then at the same time, you're like, well, I don't know, like, is that going to work out? And, it got to the point where I was like, if I worry too much about everything, like, I'm not going to have time to enjoy everything that's happening right now. Like, the things that are happening are pretty amazing. Like, the fact that I was able to go and do these things is something that I know not everyone is able to experience. And if I keep just focusing my energy on all of the things that could go wrong, even thinking about, like, what happens if it fails, right? Like, what happens if, you know, it doesn't work out? And I'm like, we'll figure something else out, right? Like, my attitude can't be like, well, you know, we're done for and it's over. And it's like, no, it just means that that door closed, but there's other opportunities. And I also know that my network is so vast that, like, I almost feel like it would be impossible. Like, the possibilities aren't even on, like, you know, in front of me right now. I'm like, okay, well, how do I make this bigger and better? How do I make sure that, you know, it doesn't fail? And if it does, okay, well, what are the tweaks that we're going to make to make sure that it continues moving forward, whatever new direction that, you know, that might look like. And it doesn't mean that there's not months that I'm just like, oh my God, what was I thinking? Because that's definitely, you know, something that comes to mind for sure. But I think every business owner has that, right? Like, what was I thinking? Like, what was I doing? Even if your business is virtual, you just wake up and you're like, why do I not like the 9 to 5 again? Like, what's so wrong with that? And then you're like, oh, wait. Oh, here's why I don't want to do that. And it feels good. You know, like I've told you guys, like, my kid was here. Like, she was helping us put this space together. And I look at that as, you know, kind of, you know, Ben was like talking about these kids that look up to him. And I'm like, how many other people look up to me, right? Like, I know I have an impact on the community. And I want to make sure that people know, like, this is, my journey is open, right? Like, people ask me all the time, like, how do you manage all these things? And I'm like, I just do. I just got to do it, right? But some of those pieces, I just don't allow to come through because it's not that I don't want to deal with, like, the fear of being scared, but if I let it get into my head all the time, I would never get anything done. Like, it would stop me from doing everything else, from putting on events, from, you know, managing members that do come in, from promoting the space. Like, I think it's good to have to keep me going, right? Like, I almost use that as like a fuel injection if needed. You know, some days when it's just like, oh my God, it's slow or whatever. And like, okay, zap. And then, okay, you know, now we're going to roll and run and, you know, continue to move forward. So that's where we're at now. I mean, ask me that same question in next year. And I could give you probably a different answer, but.
I love that. One thing that you mentioned in there that I want to touch on, I think is really powerful, was you mentioned something around like past challenges and hardships and kind of looking back in a sense on other times that things have been hard. And I think confidence and fear a lot of times are in competition, right? Where we feel like fear starts taking over and it's because we don't have enough confidence. And if confidence can get higher, then fear becomes less. And I think a big piece of confidence comes from that ability to just do that brief look backwards, that moment in time where you can check back and say, what are some of the other hard things that I've overcome in my life? What are some of these crucible moments, these big challenges that I've worked through? And if you're a person that you look back on your life and you're like, yeah, it's been kind of easy so far, then it makes sense that there'd be a lot more fear going on because you haven't built up a track record of overcoming obstacles, of climbing up over these big challenges. And so every new challenge that comes up is almost like another opportunity to add to the confidence resume, mm-hmm. right? As we can, you know, you don't become a person of confidence all of a sudden. Confidence is earned in a sense. It's earned by hardship. It's earned by challenges. And it's earned by working through stuff. And I liken it to the quote that I absolutely love, which is comparison is the thief of joy. And when you compare unrealistically, it very much is the thief of joy. However, when you compare in a different way, when you compare with perspective, when you compare with the intent of learning, it can open up a lot of opportunity. Because if you could look backwards and you compare where you were to where you are, you look back on a hard time and you look at this hard time that you're in and you say, is this easier or harder? And a lot of times you're going to find that the challenge you're in now is not as hard as that other thing. It's not as tough as that other challenge that you've already overcome. And guess what? You had to overcome that challenge to get where you are now. And you have the ability, you have the confidence, and you have the competence to get through this one now. So I kind of want to bring that topic up as far as, you know, the maybe the competition between fear and confidence.
I want to follow up on that because I think that's really important, because if you think about confidence and if you think about fear, what are you doing with your body when you feel fearful? What are you doing with your body, right? I want everyone listening right now to think about this, because a lot of people in the comments, and they're absolutely right, they say fear is subconscious, right? And then we've got these, you know, the fancy parts of the body called like that dorsal nagler or whatever it was, right? I don't even remember the word. I don't remember. And because that term, that doesn't help me, right?
It's called the devil.
Knowing what it is, that doesn't help. You know, hearing about the subconscious mind, that doesn't help, because it takes a long time to change that. But one thing you can change immediately, and it has to do with confidence and fear, they're very different, right? Think about what you're doing with your body when you are experiencing fear. You're probably not breathing, or breathing very shallowly. Your head's probably down, right? You're probably in like this daydream trance of in your head, right? And then someone says your name and you snap right out of it. Like, what are you doing with your body? Shoulders probably down. You're in contemplation. Now think about what you're doing with your body when you feel confident. Think about the drastic difference. I talked about this in the energy conversation that we had last month. Think about what you're doing with your body when you're feeling confident. It's completely opposite. You're actually breathing, right? Your shoulders are probably back. There are full breaths. You probably have a smile on your face, or at least a slight smirk, right? Everything is different with your body. So if we are like going around right now, even just giving the final thoughts on fear here to wrap up the lunch break hour, when you're feeling fearful, try to change your body immediately, right? Literally walk around your living room and with your shoulders back, breathing fully, you will immediately change your state. It will immediately change what you're thinking about, because you can't think about something that makes you fearful if you're standing in a way that you are when you're confident. It's absolutely impossible. So yes, the subconscious stuff is absolutely true. You can work on these things over time. You can release those past traumas and emotions that have stayed there for years and years and years. But if you really want to make a difference, move your body, right? When you're feeling that fear, just make a cue, something that reminds you, even on your watch or something, set a reminder to literally stand up, move your body, breathe differently. It's probably the quickest way for you to get out of that feeling of fear.
I want to hear Ben. I want to hear what maybe your story is. Make that part of your wrap up, Ben.
Yeah. So flow. Do you guys know what flow is? Mikhail?
Mihai, extend Mihai.
I was hoping someone would get that. Mihai Tsisek, I can't even say it. So, and this is a slight step away, but I promise it makes sense. He talks about competence and challenge. So you've got your skill set, and then you've got the challenge, like how the difficulty. And to fall into flow, which is this blissful state that anyone in like the entertainment industry will tell you, like, I've prepared 20 years for in sports, entertainment, I've prepared my whole life. This is the most challenging task I've ever taken on. And you come in and you're nervous and you're fearful. And this is a positive kind of fearful energy, because you have the right competence and skill set to take that challenge. And even if you're not at the highest level, it's that harmony of your level of competence is very much in line with the challenge itself. So it feels challenging, but you're competent enough. And as you're going through the motions, it just feels like you're floating on clouds. Everything's just like muscle memory, like you were born to do this. That is often known as a state of flow. But usually to get into flow, there's a fear beforehand because of the level of the challenge. But when you can get to a competence level where your competence and the challenge are basically dancing, and every time they swing you, you know that next move, those are some of the most blissful moments in our life. So one thing I've been trying to do with exposure therapy to things that kind of scare me is be like, wow, I have the competence to do this. And the fact that I'm feeling a fear is actually me kicking myself in the butt that I actually need to go do this. Because once I go do it and I have the competence and I overcome the fear, that's how we get that joyful fulfillment in the moment that can never be achieved if we're stuck in analysis paralysis. So maybe one day, flow is another topic for F, but I wanted to bring that in because I feel like fear leads to flow in so many scenarios.
That's such a great bridge, man. I absolutely love that idea because you nailed it. With to be in flow, it has to challenge you. It has to push you because, I mean, if we think about it, just think about it realistically. If something is easy, what's another word that tends to get associated with it? Boring.
Yeah.
Right. We tend to have that, like, we disconnect, right? We pull back. But when it's just challenging enough, we're just pushing that envelope, it's pushing us to get that little bit better. Love that, Ben. One thing I wanted to echo for Brandon was just that kind of physiological component was for those that who haven't listened to it, watch the TED Talk by Amy Cuddy, where she talks about the way that you carry yourself and the way you hold yourself. Fantastic one. Dives into, like, you know, like TED Talk style. 15 minutes of brilliance. I think it's one of the most watched TED Talks that's out there. Awesome. Make sure you get that one. My final thought is going to be this. When in doubt, map it out. All right, friends. If you're stuck, you're fearful, you're like struggling, write it out. Just put it down on paper. Get these thoughts out of your head and actually write out a little flow chart. Okay. What's the worst case scenario? Let's play that out. What's an average case scenario? Let's map that out. What's the best case scenario, right? And then control those controllables within that map. What can I do to make sure the worst case doesn't happen? And what can I do to ensure that best case has the best opportunity?
Wow. Very well said, both of you. Ben, that 3 minutes of the last thing that you said, that was next level. And you really got me thinking with that one. So I really appreciate you bringing up flow. Christine, what was your final thought on fear?
So for overcoming fear, my final thought would be practice. So, you know, literally mental boot camp, right? Like if you've done it before, you can do it again. And I think just kind of reassuring yourself that, like, okay, you know, it's probably not as bad as I think it's going to be. I've had worse. And if this is worse than it was, you know, from something previous that I've overcome, I'm still going to be able to overcome these things. And it almost becomes a little bit of a, I know for me, it's not necessarily like something I enjoy going through, but I know that every fear that I am able to overcome, it's almost like, well, I have this other skill now, right? Like I have this other skill in my tool belt. So when something that could be actually super scary, I may actually be able to deal with it much better because I've had a lot of practice.
Well said. Yeah. That awareness is so, so powerful because if you have those skills, you're still going to experience the fear. Like what you said, Ben, you know, you've been preparing your whole life for this moment. You've got the skill now, but you're still having those thoughts that have just run in your head for the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years. But the difference is you have the skills, like what you said, Christine, with practice, but you are prepared for it, right? And you're aware of the fear. I think that awareness is very important of feeling it, right? Knowing it's there. And I pose this challenge to everyone listening. I know we've posed a lot of challenges to you, and this one's going to sound the weirdest out of all of them. But the next time you're experiencing that fear, when you notice that shallowness, I want you to notice it and literally say, wow, yes, there it is. There's the fear. It's here. This is what I'm experiencing. And I want you to almost get excited about the fear. And I want you to think about it as, what is this teaching me? Where am I uncomfortable? And how am I growing from this experience? So literally say, yes, this is fear. I'm experiencing it. It's here now. And like almost be excited about it because the people around you will think you're really weird. So maybe don't say it out loud like that. They'll say, whoa, he's like summoning Batman or something right now. But you know, what my point is, be aware of that and notice that it's there. This has been a great conversation with you, Christine, with you, Andrew, with you, Ben, and most importantly, with all of you in the comments, Donald, Crystal, John, Shade joined us as well. Jeffrey, thank you guys so much for joining the conversation. Don as well, thank you for joining. Everyone who commented, I'm sorry if we missed you here. But next time, be sure to vote on our next Lunch Break ABC's topic. It's going to be for the letter G. And I can't even really think of some G words right now. So feel welcome to add those to the comments too if you have some G's that you would like to hear in the next episode. But these episodes come from your votes. If you liked this, please share it with someone else who would enjoy it as well. We are the Lunch Break ABCs. And thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day, guys.